Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, glad you're with us. Happy Friday. Let us begin with our thoughts and prayers for the people of Texas. We love Texas. It's one of the great states in this country. And you have what will be a Category 3 hurricane that is going to, it looks like, pretty much smash right into Corpus Christi, Texas, almost a direct hit. Its estimated land time is literally the second I go on the air at TV at 10 Eastern, and we'll be live, and Joe Bastardi will be here. He'll be on the radio today, and he'll be on TV tonight. All our people on the ground from Fox, all our news people. You know, one of the things, I do have great admiration and courage for news people and reporters, and not the lying lighters over at fake news CNN, and you know, but there are really great reporters that put themselves in harm's way in war zones, and they throw themselves in the middle. I remember one time, Geraldo Rivera, and I was one other reporter. I don't remember who it was. Maybe it was Katrina. No, I don't think it was Katrina. It was one, just a big hurricane, and Geraldo's like nearly getting blown away. And it's dangerous duty. You have debris flying, you know, stop signs flying in the air, you know, over your head. And it's you know, they do it to bring people the news and give you the pictures and get you the real life understanding of what's happening. It's amazing. Could you imagine we didn't have meteorology? Now, I know my friend Joe Bastardi, I give him a hard time for being so into his science, but he loves it so much. He could tell you about every storm, every place, every time, the amount of damage, how many died, how many survived. But remember, they didn't have warnings of these things. You know, if you have a tornado now in Oklahoma, you're not going to get a whole lot of warning, but you get some warning, enough time to get into your shelter at your house because you're in that tornado alley area. What was it? Moore, Oklahoma got smashed. I'll never forget. I was down there not long after it happened, flew over the area that got ravaged, and you could see it's like a line. It's like, all right, we'll take out this street and these houses, but not these, this house, not that house, this house. And it goes, you could see just literally the entire path of the thing. And now we also get early warning on all these hurricanes. And now what they're saying, it's probably going to battle in and hit the shore as a Category 3 hurricane. So real danger. I hope the people on the ground. Listen, there are people that no matter what, they're not going to leave. They just refuse. They're just like, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to tough it out. I admire their individualism. They have a right to make their decision. The government should not have to force people out of their homes. But I just do remind you the story, and it's a little bit of a funny story. So the police come and tell this guy, you got to get out of here. The big one's coming. The levee's going to break. The whole thing is going to be flooded. And the homeowner goes, God's going to save me. And he goes, all right. They say, all right, but we got to let you go. Anyway, the first part of the levees break, the storm's coming in, and next thing you know, the police come up in a boat, like, let's go, this is it. Once that other levee breaks, you're done. Your house is going to be totally submerged. And he goes, no, God's going to save me. Anyway, a few minutes later, cops get out of there, they get to safety, and then all of a sudden the other levee breaks, boom. This guy has to quickly poke a hole in his roof at the top of a three-story house. And he goes to the tippy top of his roof and he's hanging on and it's literally up to his neck in water. And he's hanging on to the chimney with all his might. And then a helicopter comes. It's the police again. Hurry up. Just grab the ladder. Come on. We'll come down and get you. And let's get out of here. God's going to save me. Well, he got washed away. He didn't take the helicopter, and he died. And then he gets to heaven, and he's at the pearly gates. Will you guys stop with the what is he doing thing? And he gets to the pearly gates, and he goes to God. He gets to meet God. God, I thought you would save me. What are you talking about? I sent a car. I sent a boat. I even sent a helicopter. And you didn't take my help. You never heard that before, did you? You've never heard it before.
No, because I just said, Ethan goes, this is a joke. I'm like, no, it's not. This is a very sad story. The man just died. And everybody started laughing. I was like, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Well, I mean, look, there are some people that think that, oh, they can't go to whatever religious belief that they can't go to a doctor or a hospital or get a blood transfusion. I don't like to bash anybody's religion. I think everybody has the right to be who they are and do what they want to do in life. Anyway, so the point is there are people that also have gifts in life, and those people with gifts in life can help other people. Amazing. Gifts in life and other people can help other people. Pretty amazing. I don't know. Like Linda's helps on the show. Ethan doesn't help too much. How did Ethan get the back row? You let him have the back row of our new studio. Why don't you
like seeing my pretty face every day?
No, not really. I'm at eyeball level with you. I need to put you down a little further. I can see Jason, though. I have a better view of Jason. He doesn't get to hide like he did in the old studio. All right, so I want to tell you this other. We're going to get to Joe Bastardi in just a minute. We have other news we're going to get to today. But I want to tell you something maybe new and that you don't know that the mainstream media won't cover. But there is now, it's beginning to percolate and bubble up, and it is something that we have been looking at, investigating, questioning, raising questions about. Because if you remember, we have this long montage of intelligence officials and even Dianne Feinstein, no evidence of Russia-Trump collusion, no evidence. There's a lot of smoke we kept hearing, but there's no evidence of Russia-Trump collusion. Do you realize with all the thousands of media hours, all the barrels of ink that have been used, all of the articles online, there's no evidence of Trump-Russia election collusion. We've interviewed Julian Assange more than anybody else in the media 5 times. And every time he said it wasn't Russia, it wasn't a state.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
Now, maybe you don't like Julian Assange. I found him to be incredibly forthcoming, smart, and frankly, in a lot of ways, brilliant. I mean, if you get to the deep knowledge that these guys have, but I found them to be totally honest. WikiLeaks has never been wrong in 11 years. The other thing that WikiLeaks has not done either, which they could do, is reveal the names of people that they know, operatives in countries that would be killed upon the release of those documents. So there is a lot of integrity there, and one day that story is going to be told in full, but I digress. Let me get back to this. So The Nation is a left-wing magazine, and they're online now. And then you have Bloomberg, which is sort of mainstream, left-leaning, but they consider themselves to be liberal. And The Washington Times, they're more objective, honest, fair, better reporters. And they've all written stories now in one shape, matter, or form. And the bottom line of the piece that they're writing is, what if the Russia narrative was false? What if it wasn't Russia from the beginning? Now, let me take you back. In 2003, a group of former intelligence professionals formed a group to protest the way intelligence was bent to accuse Iraq of producing weapons of mass destruction. Then they went on to say, the New York Times columnist at the time, Nicholas Kristof, wrote a piece that was sympathetic to this group, quoting those members of that group because he didn't want the war with Saddam Hussein. To me, the overwhelming evidence was the dead children and women in the streets in northern Iraq and the Kurds, where we know he used weapons of mass destruction. I never believed that he destroyed them, and I believe in the long lead-up, probably a lot of it got sent over to Syria. I can't prove that, just my own theory. And we're all allowed to have thoughts and theories in life, so that's what I believe. But he did use chemical weapons against his own people. So that's what convinced me. Anyway, the group then was called the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. VIPS for short. VIPS for short. They've been investigating what is conventional wisdom. that the DNC committee files were the result of a Russian hack. And what they found instead is evidence to the contrary. Now, we're going to introduce you to two of the people involved in studying this. They combined have hundreds of years of intelligence experience. And unlike the current and former intelligence officials that are anonymously quoted in every newspaper by every news organization, these guys actually come out and put their name and their reputation and their credibility on the line. Now, what they have found are not only doubts, they are almost completely convinced, if not 100%, that it wasn't Russia when you talk to them. But anyway, you got The Nation and you got Bloomberg and others, you know, pointing out their findings that a lot of that it's likely that these DNC files were taken from the inside of the DNC rather than by hackers or Russians or otherwise. Now, I don't know who did it, and I'm not going to venture a guess on who did it. We've been looking at this and investigating this. In other words, the question that needs to be asked, if it wasn't Russia, then who was it? Was it disgruntled Bernie Sanders supporters that saw the evidence? Remember, on the eve of the DNC convention, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is fired. The six other people are fired. Then you raise the question about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and being abusive to that police officer. Then she's paying this IT guy and his family, one guy that worked at McDonald's and got fired, one guy that worked at a car dealership, no seeming IT experience, and they're getting paid a fortune, a couple of million dollars over a number of years, and then she wouldn't fire the guy, and then we find government computers and hard drives smashed into little pieces after he tries to flee to Pakistan, according to reports, after he advanced $300,000 there. Anyway, the assessment of the intelligence community, which serves as the basis for the accusations that Russia hacked the election, was, you know, they had confidence, high confidence, that Russia military intelligence, that they used Guccifer 2.0 and the DCLeaks.com to release U.S. victim data obtained in cyber operations publicly, and in exclusives to media outlets relayed to WikiLeaks. That's what they claimed. Well, this group of former intelligence officials with hundreds of years of experience, they surmised that after WikiLeaks' Julian Assange announced on June the 12th his intention to publish the Hillary Clinton-related emails, the DNC rushed to fabricate evidence that it had been hacked by Russia to defuse any potential WikiLeaks disclosure. That's what they're concluding. To this end, the theory goes on. The DNC then used Guccifer 2.0 online persona, that persona, to release mostly harmless DNC data. And Guccifer was later loosely linked to Russia because of the Russia metadata that were in his files and his use and a Russian-based virtual private network. Then their theory goes on to say forensic findings by independent researchers that know how to do all this stuff that go by pseudonyms Forensicator and Adam Carter. Well, anyway, the former found that 1,976 megabytes of Guccifer's files were copied by the DNC server in 87 seconds on July 5th, implying a transfer rate of 22.6 megabytes per second. Or converted to a measure that we use, 180 megabits per second. You know, a speed that's not commonly available by internet providers. And downloading these quickly would have been all but impossible. And as the Forensicator pointed out, the files could have been copied to a thumb drive, something only an insider could have done at about that speed. Adam Carter was a pseudonym for another analyst. Anyway, what they're finding here is they don't believe it. And they're putting their names on it. And the people that leaked to the media never put their names on it. Here's the question. What if the people that put their name on it with hundreds of years of intelligence experience, what if they now show that it was never Russia? Nobody knows the truth. We have no evidence right now. What if we can prove it wasn't? Dana Rohrabacher just met with Julian Assange. He says he's got the evidence. All right, so this group that is called the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity Group, they've been investigating this conventional wisdom that the WikiLeaks reveal came from Russia and Trump-Russia collusion, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they're saying that that the forensic evidence is showing just the opposite, and they're telling exactly how it all happened. And what they did is they, with all their 100, 200, 300 years of experience combined, I'm not sure, Bill Binney, 34 years alone, he's going to join us later in the program today. He's the former technical director for the World Geopolitical Military Analysis. This other guy, Edward Loomis Jr., is a former technical director for the Office of Signals Processing. You know what signals are. As well as other ex-intelligence officials with equally impressive credentials and decades and decades and decades of experience. And what their record is basically to hold the different intelligence agencies accountable. And while the group ended up being right that we wouldn't find WMDs in Iraq. Now, some groups, well, that doesn't mean they're right here, but it does fit in the narrative that Julian Assange has said on this program five times, TV and radio. And yet there aren't any, it's now beginning to percolate. And it begins to put in place, and maybe it's, you know, we'll begin to understand why people have been acting the way they have. Why did Debbie Wasserman Schultz, why was she mean to the police officer? Why did this guy who double billed get to keep his job? Why did this guy have government computers and hard drives, according to reports, all busted up in his garage? Is this in any way connected to Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails, acid washed and bleach bit and, you know, broken BlackBerries, and she only wanted one device and broken up hammered iPhones, and the FBI gets, oh, let's see, they get BlackBerries with no SIM cards, which are useless. Where does this end? Was this about disgruntled DNC workers that saw for themselves what we already knew, that the fix was in? And to what degree could the DNC be involved in all of this? All right, we're doing that. We're also on a pardon watch today. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit. And straight ahead as we continue, we're watching Hurricane Harvey. And Joe Bastardi joins us next with an update.
One thing you can always count on. Sean Hannity is back on the radio.
I'm actually doing something I rarely do, eating. And the reason I'm eating is because Lauren puts food in front of me, and I can't say no to bacon. Hang on a second. Bacon is like the greatest creation.
This is not okay.
Yeah, exactly. What's wrong with that? That's fine. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. Now, as we start out today, at around 10 o'clock tonight, just as I'm coming on TV, this storm is literally about to hit the coast, and it's coming in right at Corpus Christi, Texas, and then it's going to make its way, literally hover around Corpus Christi, dumping massive amounts of water. It looks like it's landing at a Category 3. And Joe Bastardi with WeatherBell.com is with us. So about the time I'm going on the air tonight is D time, right?
Yeah, that's when, I don't even know what to say about that. It's coming ashore about that time. And
is it going to, it looks like a Cat 3 when it hits?
Yeah, at least a Cat 3. These things, what happens is the shape of the coastline, Sean, you see the way the Texas coast, you folks that are looking at it, is shaped cyclonically like that. It's good. It's arcing. What happens is the storm literally tightens up as it comes to the coastline. You saw that with Hugo back in 1989, where the storm, as it's coming to the coast, the center tightened up and got stronger and stronger. So I think that this is, it's a major hurricane now. It may be a Cat 4 landfall, and it's just a monster that's coming ashore.
So you really think now, it might be a Cat 4 at landing tonight?
It could get on my scale, a power and impact scale, which takes into account pressure. The barometric pressure in the storm is approaching Category 4 levels right now. And the theory behind that is if the pressure's that low, the wind will show up someplace. And, when you fly a recon in, you can't hit every single spot because it goes through the eye wall in one place and out the eye wall in another place. And the hurricane is like a person. It has stronger points and weaker points. So what happens is you may be missing the strongest winds. The positive spin on this right now is that it's going east of Corpus Christi. It will be making landfall up the coast in a relatively sparsely populated area. Now, if you live there, I'm not trying to put you down or anything like that, but you where this hurricane is going ashore, it's not like if it was making a direct hit into the major naval center, Corpus Christi. It's bad in Corpus Christi. The wind gusts 60, 70 miles an hour already.
But it's a little north. So it's 70 miles an hour now is bad.
Yeah, but and they probably get gusts to 80, 90 miles an hour in there, but that's quite a bit of difference from a sustained wind of 120 with gusts to 140, which is where this is at now. And by the time it comes ashore, it may be 135, gusts to 155, right, as you're going on the air.
So, I mean, the huge danger in all of this is obvious. I mean, you got flying objects, number one. Number two, you're going to have severe winds. You're going to have broken glass. You're going to have things flying all over the place. I know that there has been an evacuation notice sent out to some, but we both know that not everybody's going to get out. You know, how dangerous are they being with their lives if they stay?
Well, for instance, up in the Houston-Galveston area, there is a chance they avoid their worst-case scenario, which would be the storm's going to get back out over the water Sunday night and Monday and come back in. But if it can get out over the water, then come back into the west of Galveston and Houston, it wouldn't be as bad as if it came in just to the east, because it would get stronger and stronger out there. So they could avoid their worst-case scenario. But, folks, listen, when you're talking about 1 to 2 feet of rain, and those of you who have lived through things like this, you know that it doesn't take a wind more than 30, 40 miles an hour to drop the trees when they're that soaked. So what starts happening is if you have all this flooding going on and your power's out, and it's 2, 3, 4 days. People can't get to you because the rivers are up and everything else. So it's a very simple deduction. You just get the heck out of the area, and then you come back, and hopefully things aren't that bad. But I've watched this for years and years. And, you know, when I was a younger kid, so, you know, you couldn't get me out of, when Bell was coming up the East Coast in 76, I'm out there wanting to go out and measure the winds out on the beach. But as you get older and you're responsible for stuff like this, you got to get the heck out of there. And that's the advice that you have to give people. And you listen to what people are telling you.
Yeah. All right. Let's go through, because this is it's not unusual, because you know the history of every hurricane that's ever hit this country and the impact and the danger and the number of people that died. And if it wasn't such a serious day, I would test you, and I know you'd get the questions right. But all right, so in and around the Corpus Christi area, it's going to hit around airtime for me tonight at 10. We'll have full coverage for the full hour tonight. Now, when that happens, and we'll have our reporters on the ground and people's in harm's way, and they'll show you everything you need to know. All right, when it hits, then it's going to go somewhat inland, about how far inland, and then it's going to stop and make a turn right back, right?
Right. Well, what happens is it's going to go 50 to 75 miles inland, and tomorrow evening will be west of Victoria, Texas.
Okay.
If you've ever been in there. Then it's going to drop back south again, and Sunday evening may be west of Corpus Christi in a weakened state. And then Monday evening, it's back out over the water to the east of Corpus Christi. Now, here's where it really gets tricky. I've been confident about this loop for 3 days. The problem is that once you get back out over the water, does it continue moving east-northeastward along the coast and make its the final landfall to the east of Galveston, in which case it would really have a chance to rev up and become a powerful hurricane again? Or can it go back into the west? It doesn't have as much time out over the water, and it's still a very, very bad situation, but you would not have the kind of hammering winds and the what I describe as a pincer movement in Galveston that could lead to the bay literally coming into Galveston from behind, never mind the storm surge in front that you deal with in the first part. So I'm very concerned about that option. So once we get to Monday, we have another fight with this as to try to figure out how strong will it be and where will it go. But the general terminology here, folks, the general story is you've got a large, slow-moving system over warm tropical waters. It got trapped, and because it got trapped, it's a catastrophic event for the Texas coast from the coastal bend, where we're hitting full force as a hurricane, to at the very least a tremendous rain event, perhaps on the scale of Allison, and you folks around the Houston area, KTRH listeners, know what Allison did. That is on the table here. So we've got to acknowledge those things, and that's why we believe it's a catastrophic storm when it's all totaled up. I will say this, though. Missing Corpus, but when I say missing Corpus Christi, I'm not saying it's missing Corpus Christi. I'm saying the worst of the storm will be up the coast a little ways from Corpus Christi, okay? But doing that and going into that area, and by the way, the town of Indianola, Texas, the port of Indianola, Texas, you know, in the 1800s, was the biggest port there was until two major hurricanes hit it, and they said, forget this, and that's how Galveston, Houston became the big port. I don't know if people know Texas legends, but this area is notorious for these very, very powerful hurricanes where this is going in. So it's not like there's anything magic about this particular storm. As a matter of fact, it's simply history repeating itself, except we're observing it in 2017.
Wow. All right. So when it goes in the again, a little bit north of Corpus Christi, and it's there and it hovers and makes its turn back to the coast, how many hours are we talking about, and how much total rain are we looking at, and how much devastation do you see?
Well, as far as the metrics that I deal with, highest winds and rain, there will be 3 to 4 feet of rain in some areas near Matagorda Bay.
Whoa,
that's
three,
what I believe.
3 to 4 feet of rain? 48 inches of rain?
Yeah, there'll be 3 to 4 feet in there. Now, before we go crazy on this, let's remember Hurricane Flora in 1963 in Cuba. It's the one Castro accused the U.S. of stopping the hurricane over his island. This is
yeah.
So what happens? There was 100 inches of rain in 4 days at Santiago de Cuba. That's not some little town. I mean, it's a pretty big town in there. So these things, when they move slowly, are capable of producing this type of tremendous rain. That will be in a relatively non-populated area. I mean, if you live there, it's a problem, but it's not like that's happening in Houston. I think Houston gets 1 to 2 feet of rain, locally 25 to 30 inches in the Houston-Galveston area, which is a huge problem in the first place. But if you're looking for the bullseye of heaviest rain, it's liable to be near Matagorda Bay, Corpus Christi, 1 to 2 feet of rain, and 1 foot of rain may extend as far inland as almost San Antonio, Austin, College Station, our listeners,
wow.
WTAW College Station. I mean, you're going to have a tremendous storm in there as far as rain amounts go. And then just imagine all that water coming down the Brazos, the Trinity.
How many high tides are you going to be dealing with, considering the slow moving nature of this and the return path of this?
Well, that is exactly right. So you're getting a piling up of water. It's interesting in that, when I was talking to Linda a little bit earlier, I said it's not dissimilar to Sandy. Remember, Sandy kept piling more in, and more water. You don't usually see this in the Gulf coastal areas, but again, you have this storm trapped. Now, what's interesting about the trapping situation, folks, is I see this all the time. Because, I've watched this out in the Atlantic, and I can show you some tracks that are crazier than this, right? And they usually happen between 25 and 35 north, that area around 30 north. And this just happens to be getting trapped because of all the cool air and the buckling of the jet stream all the way down to Texas. It's almost as if an abnormally cool weather pattern is causing the worst of what is a summer situation.
Unbelievable. And, all right, so now, let's go through the time frame. Assuming it lands, it's predicted somewhere just around the time I come on TV tonight. But so let's go through all day tomorrow and where this is going to be. Let's go through where it's going to be on Sunday. And let's go through your time frame, when you expect it's in Galveston, Houston, and what it does from there.
Well, Galveston and Houston.
No. Let's start the time frame tonight. And what time if it lands? Go ahead.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get this ashore to the north of Corpus Christi this evening. So that's or later tonight, the time you're on the air. And tomorrow it's going to be just to the west of Victoria in the afternoon and evening. And then it's going to start drifting back south and southwest. So and while it's doing it, it's weakening. And so instead of the monster hurricane force winds, by Sunday you're down to a 30 to 40 mile an hour storm. But there's strong winds still out over the Gulf of Mexico. So it's just a big, broad area of relatively strong winds. And then what happens is that will emerge back out over the Gulf of Mexico to the east of Corpus Christi on Monday. When it does that, it will start a northeast path and probably come back into Texas someplace between Matagorda Bay and Galveston, it looks like, or Beaumont, Port Arthur, that upper Texas coast, sometime later Tuesday or Wednesday. And there's still a chance, believe it or not, a week from today, this thing is trapped over eastern Texas.
So oh, my gosh. So you're talking about from Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, all day Monday, all day Tuesday at least.
Yeah, and bands of heavy precipitation, the way Houston and Galveston are getting, is they're getting bands of heavy precipitation that rotate through and it may back off, come in. These areas further west, where the storm eventually does move out Monday and Tuesday, they're getting a pretty consistent pounding over the weekend. You know, if you've ever looked at tropical storm tracks, I mean, there was one that hit the North Carolina coast in 71, Ginger. She was on the charts for 31 days, and she rolled around in the central Atlantic for 6-7 days over 2,000 miles east of the coast and then came back. So, folks, all I'm saying is this. You know, keep it in perspective. I mean, as far as it doesn't mean anything beyond the fact that we have a major hurricane. It's hitting the United States, and it's getting trapped. There's nothing magical about it. It's just the circumstance we're in, and things like this happen in nature and in weather.
No, understood. But to the degree that people can prepare, you're saying people better buckle up. This is not going to be over in 24 hours. This is going to hang out there and hang out there and hang out there. And then you have multiple high tides obviously coming in during the course of this, and the flooding is going to be severe. This is pretty rough. All right. Really appreciate it. Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. All right, so what if it wasn't Russia? Well, the people, the intelligence people, the veterans intelligence professionals for sanity are going to join us and tell us they don't think it was Russia. Who was it then? Also, we're on a pardon watch on this Friday for Joe Arpaio. We'll watch that and more straight ahead.
Can you elaborate more on what the DHS's connection with the DNC was, or consultation with the DNC was, after you became aware of the hacking and they became aware of the hacking, as to what was offered them, what they accepted? Was there any level of cooperation at all?
To my disappointment, not to my knowledge, sir. And this is a question I asked repeatedly when I first learned of it. You know, what are we doing? Are we in there? Are we helping them discover the vulnerabilities? Because this was fresh off the OPM experience. And there was a point at which DHS cybersecurity experts did get into OPM and actually help them discover the bad actors and patch some of the exfiltrations, or at least minimize some of the damage. And so I was anxious to know whether or not our folks were in there. And the response I got was FBI had spoken to them. They don't want our help. They have CrowdStrike, the cybersecurity firm. And that was the answer I got after I asked the question a number of times over the progression of time.
Now, that was, I assume, totally different from the reaction you got from OPM.
The OPM effort, we were actually in there on site helping them find the bad actors.
Do you know who it was at the DNC who made that decision, or who was making the resistance?
No.
Do you know if the FBI continued to try to help, try to assist?
I have. I've read in the New York Times about those efforts sometime earlier this year.
Let me just be very clear. At no point during my tenure at the DNC was I contacted by the FBI, DHS, or any government agency, or alerted or made aware that they believed that the Russians, an enemy state, was intruding on our network. At no point. And I am a member of Congress who had the ability to sit down and be briefed in a classified setting. Even Director Comey testified publicly that he wished that he had gone to the top of the organization. We're one of the two national political parties. It is astounding that when they had a member of Congress who was leading that organization, that no one felt it was any more important when we had a foreign enemy intruding on one of the two political parties' networks to do anything more than lob a phone call in to our tech support through our main switchboard.
But how can both
That's
be
outrageous.
True? I mean, Secretary Johnson says that DNC rebuffed the help that they offered. You're saying that no one ever contacted you.
Respectfully, Secretary Johnson is utterly misinformed. That is simply not accurate. And much that has been written about the timeline of events by the New York Times, the Washington Post, that document through multiple sources, including me, that the FBI and other federal agencies did virtually nothing to make sure that when they were aware. At the point that they were aware that there was, or concerned that there was an intrusion on our network by the Russians, that they did virtually nothing to sound the alarm bells to make us aware of that. And they left, essentially, the Russians on our network for almost a year.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So, in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show, Hour 2, 800-941. Sean, toll-free telephone number. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to check in again with Joe Bastardi. Get the latest on Hurricane Harvey that is now pounding its way. Looks like it'll land around 10 Eastern tonight. Our time, just as we're coming on the air, Category 3, Corpus Christi, and then again, it's going to stay there and circle back, and a lot of rain is going to be dropped, a lot of high winds, a lot of potential for damage and danger here, so we're urging everybody in the area to be tremendously cautious, and then it'll make its way up the northeastern coast of Texas to Galveston in the Houston area. So we'll have more on that in the bottom of the hour. You know, it's very, very interesting. Remember when the FBI wanted to look at the DNC server emails and wanted to get to the bottom of the hacking thing? And they, no, don't touch our email server. No. And remember when Debbie Wasserman Schultz was battling back against the police officer being extraordinarily rude? And then she kept on the payroll after other Democrats got rid of this IT guy who had his entire family, including guys that got fired from McDonald's and another guy that ran a car dealership or worked at a car dealership, seemingly no IT experience amongst them. And then the IT guy has the $300,000 wired to Pakistan. Then the IT guy tries to get out of the country with an ankle bracelet. Then the IT guy has government computer hard drive smashed in a little itsy bitsy pieces in his garage. And you begin to wonder, what is going on here? Deleted emails of Hillary, acid wash, bleach pit, smashed up devices, no SIM cards handed over to the FBI. Now The Nation, Bloomberg, The Washington Times have now begun reporting, what if it was never Trump-Russia collusion? That which you now have been told for almost a year. And why is Robert Mueller's special counsel even in existence, if in fact that is true? There is a group of people, the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPs, we call them. They've been investigating this conventional wisdom that last year's leaks by WikiLeaks. Remember, I've interviewed Julian Assange five times of the DNC files, emails were the result of Russian hacks. Russia, Russia, Russia. What they found is just the opposite, evidence to the contrary. And the people involved in this, without going forensic investigations of these documents, just made a couple of weeks ago, prior to the July 5th leak 2016 by the person or the entity known as Guccifer 2.0, show that they were fraudulent. Now, before Guccifer posted them, they were adulterated by cutting and pasting them in a blank template that had Russia as its default language. And Guccifer took responsibility on June 15th for an intrusion that the DNC reported on June 14th and professed to be a WikiLeaks source, claims essential to the official narrative implicating Russia in what was soon cast as an extensive hacking operation and has led to a year of Trump-Russia collusion. Joining us now to discuss it, well, he is one of the participating members of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity Group. Bill Binney is with us. He worked for the NSA. Is the World Geopolitical Military Analysis and Reporting Group, 34 years that he was with the NSA. Kirk Wiebe's back with us, former senior analyst for the NSA. Bill Binney, I'm not sure I'm explaining this well. You know this better than I do, but you did a hard investigation. How many years combined experience do you think you had with all the guys that worked on this?
Hundreds, I would say. Hundreds of years. Kirk and I have about 100, we have a little over 80, I think, years together.
Okay, tell us what you did and what you found.
Well, we formed a group to try to find some evidence to actually look at to find out what really happened and be able to say something or infer things. And the only thing we found was some of the data on a 5 July thing that a local download of the data based on the speed and everything, because at the time, you see, the speed it was downloaded about 23 megabytes per second. That's the speed of a download to a USB port to a thumb drive, for example. But also, there were limited capacity lines that could handle that speed at the time. Certainly, it couldn't go transatlantic and over past Western Europe and into Eastern Europe. That was not possible at that time. And still, we're preparing a test to see how much data can be passed across here now, this year, just to see if we can test to see what the capacity is, even now. But back then, certainly, it wasn't possible by what existed.
Yeah. All right. So the narrative has been, and every news network in the country has been advancing, and that, remember, I've tried to get the evidence, and we've had people like Clapper and Comey and all of these, and Brennan and all these intelligence people that say there's no evidence. People in the Senate and Congress and all that, they've all said there's no evidence. A lot of smoke, but we don't have the fire. So you're saying that what are the odds that it wasn't Russia at all, that it was – what are the odds?
Well, I figure it's probably one chance in 100 that it was them. But even so, you know, there's no smoke. We couldn't even find any smoke. Certainly we couldn't then find any evidence that would show it went beyond a land that had the capacity to handle that speed, which would have been locally in the DNC land or perhaps slightly off on a few lines inside the eastern United States. But certainly not transatlantic and not transpacific.
Yeah. All right, so who then likely did this? Because Julian Assange, and I've been saying this, he would be the one guy that knows 100%, would he not, where the information came from?
Well, I mean, you know, Craig Murray, Ambassador Craig Murray, had said he met with the one of the fellows who said he was the source for that information for WikiLeaks, and he met them in the American University
right, in
Washington.
Well, I've talked about that story for a long time. Are we talking about disgruntled Bernie Sanders supporters that felt that the election, the primary, was rigged?
I would think that's highly likely. I mean, certainly the probability of that happening is pretty high, I would think.
You think it's probably. But you're saying that the odds that it was Russia-Trump collusion in terms of the WikiLeaks documents on the DNC are zero?
Very close. I mean, it's just almost the same as the Chinese or the Israelis or the Germans or the British doing the same hack. So what's the likelihood of them? I would say it's all equal to any of them.
Right. What I guess the next question then is, how do we find the truth? Now, I do know that Dana Rohrabacher was the first congressman to ever meet with Julian Assange. I'd been to the Ecuadorian embassy in London. I think you know that.
Yes, so have I.
Oh, you've spoken to Julian Assange?
Yes, yeah.
What insight can you give us? Did you find him credible?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
By the way, so did I.
Any evidence at all that he's ever published that has ever been wrong? I mean,
it's a perfect track record. 11 years, he's never been proven wrong.
Right. That's what I mean. So, and you look at our national intelligence community, how many times have we witnessed them lying even to Congress?
All right, Bill Binney, stay right there. Kirk, we're not ignoring you. We had you on yesterday, but we'll come back and we'll get back to this discussion. So here's the big question. What if it wasn't Russia-Trump collusion at all? What does that mean for the Mueller investigation, the special counsel? What does it mean? What does it say about media in this country? And when are we going to get to the truth here? We need the truth because the American people deserve to know the truth. And if you've been lied to for a year by the media, it is going to be one of the biggest scandals in the history of media. This is nothing compared to Dan Rather's National Guard report. Let's put it that way. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, as we continue with Kirk Wiebe, former senior analyst for the NSA, and Bill Binney is with us, and the veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity have this report. It's now been picked up by The Nation and by The Washington Times and by Bloomberg and by others that, in fact, it never was Russia. What if it never was Trump-Russia collusion, in spite of all that you've heard now for all this long period of time? Kirk, what is your take on what you've just heard from Bill and what you're reading here and your involvement?
Yeah, well, I also met Julian Assange at the embassy a couple of years back, and I found him just as credible as you and Bill did. no reason to doubt him whatsoever. His integrity's on the line on this whole issue and many others. This whole thing smells. It's over the top, Sean. I smell a rat. I smell a cover-up. I smell an attempt to frame the Russians. And we need to get to the bottom of it. This is as serious as any other crisis facing the U.S. government, and I am frankly dismayed at the government, and I include both the legislative side and the executive. They're not willing to march briskly forward on this matter. Now, we can hope that Mueller's going to investigate it. I really do. I pray that he does. But I'm very worried about the low-key approach to this whole thing.
Well, I am too. Now, did you ever meet with Julian Kirk?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so did you guys go together?
No, Bill and I were on separate missions.
Okay. Did you find him credible?
Absolutely.
So did I. Now, he's been right, and I know some people don't like what he does, but he hacked into the government at 16 and the DOD and NASA, and he's now 45. So anyway, if the government doesn't protect with cybersecurity, I blame us at some point. But the bottom line, does Mueller have an obligation now to go over there?
Yeah, he does. He has an obligation to leave no stone unturned. This is a critical issue facing our government, Sean. It's got to be pursued.
Okay. I mean, I think so, too. And let me ask you this question. At the end of the day, is this country going to learn that disgruntled Bernie people were the ones responsible for the WikiLeaks leak?
I believe that's highly likely.
Do you think the government knows now, our intelligence knows the truth now? Does Clapper know the truth now?
I believe that NSA should be able to tell everybody what's going on here, and they're not speaking up. Admiral Rogers ought to be in the front page of everything saying, here's what happened and here's the evidence, and he's not doing that.
Why do you think they would allow this to go on like this?
Because I don't think the shadow government, meaning the intelligence community and all the affiliated contractors and anything that were looking for money, they're all afraid that Trump's going to shake up the IC, the intelligence community. They're afraid of him and what he'll do to them and in terms of their budgets.
How soon do you think the average American will know?
The FBI under the... hopefully under Sessions it'll change, right? And the new administrator of the FBI, hopefully they'll move things along faster. But otherwise, Mueller will drag us out, I think, as long as he can because he's a part of this shadow government.
And you think that Mueller knows exactly what the truth is going into this?
I think he's got a good idea, if not all of the truth. He probably knows most of it.
Wow. All right, I got to let you both go. We're going to continue to cover this story. Imagine if it wasn't Russia from the get-go. Wow. When the Nation's a left-wing magazine, Bloomberg's in the middle, Washington Times more conservative. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN is the number. We'll continue.
Covers the real truth about the politics of D.C. He's your watchdog on Big Brother every day. Hannity is on right now.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, our number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. And our thoughts and prayers go out to the people. Well, first, it's going to be Corpus Christi. The scary thing about this is it looks like it's going to come in as a cat 3, meaning Hurricane Harvey, and then it's going to go inland, and then it's just going to sort of turn around and go back the whole while dumping all of this rain. And then it becomes a huge flooding issue, high wind issue, hurricane conditions. And then it's going to make its way up sort of the northeastern side of Texas, you know, through Houston and surrounding areas. And I know there are some areas where they have been warning you to get out. I know traffic is probably hard and difficult, and some of you are listening right now, and I urge you to please listen to the governor, listen to the authorities, follow instructions, be good little children, but do it for the safety of your own safety. This is not worth gambling with your life. You can always replace a home. You can never replace a human life, and tragedies do happen when some people get stubborn. Don't be stubborn. Joe Bastardi is the official weatherman of the Sean Hannity Show, weatherbell.com, and a good friend of the program and friend of mine. All right, so what time about landfall tonight? It's about the time I'm getting on the air, right?
First of all, the landfall is going to be northeast of Corpus Christi, maybe 20, 25 miles, and that is crucial because if the landfall was a little south of Corpus and the center came over Corpus, that would be, that would have the entire surge into that funnel-shaped Corpus Christi Bay would come back into Corpus Christi. Now, that's a very bad storm in Corpus Christi. There is absolutely no question about that situation. However, the landfall a little bit further up the coast the way it is will make for the kind of situation that Corpus will escape the worst. And that area where it's going in is sparsely populated, by the way. And there's a reason for that. If you go back and look at the Legends of Texas Hurricanes, there's a town called Indianola, and back in the 1800s, this was the biggest port on the Texas Gulf Coast. It got hit two times in a row by major hurricanes, and then they relocated the town inland. And if you notice the map area of that part of Texas in the coastal bend, it's not populated as much as, you know, Houston, Galveston, Corpus. So that is a little bit of a bright glimmer here in what is a catastrophic situation.
Well, how much rain? Now, we also run the risk because it's hovering so long that you're going to deal with multiple high tides, including around the time when it hits.
Yes.
So my question is, that coupled with the amount of rain that we're talking about here and the high winds and everything else associated with this, what are you talking about the biggest dangers for people are, besides the obvious when you got a Cat 3 hurricane hitting your shore?
Well, the most extreme option in what we've been forecasting so far, and I hope I'm wrong on this, is that the storm comes back out over the water and then parallels the Texas coast going inland just to the east of Galveston. If it does that, then we have a real problem because when you get up to Galveston and you look at the configuration of the city gets hit from the southeast and they had to build that big seawall after the 1900 hurricane. But we've never seen a storm intensify and try to come by Galveston by moving northeastward. Now, what would that do? Well, you have all this immense rain going on, and it goes into the Houston area, too. All that water comes into Galveston Bay. Meanwhile, multiple surges of water is coming in from the Gulf into Galveston Bay, elevating Galveston Bay. And then after the storm goes by, the wind shifts, and they get bayside flooding, which I
haven't
seen. I'm praying that this is not going to happen, that our forecast, you know, I actually am rooting against what I'm forecasting here, in that the storm, I'm sure it's going to make the loop, folks, get back over the Gulf. But if it could come up west of Galveston, you know, into that area to the west of Houston, then it won't be as bad as what I've just described, because what I've just described is a very, very bad situation.
Yeah. All right. So last question, and you've been awesome, by the way, and we do appreciate you coming on and telling our audience everything and putting everything in perspective for them. Just for the people that are in harm's way, your advice to them now.
I would get, you have to get out here. This is the kind of situation where, you know, if you're, even if you're just looking at 1 to 2 feet of rain and 20, 30 mile an hour winds, that will take trees down because the ground gets saturated and everything else. And you don't want to be caught in a situation where there's no fresh water, you know, the power's out for 5, 6 days. You want to be out of that situation. And so I tell people all the time, you know, with a storm like this, when you have potential like this, you simply say, well, look, if it doesn't turn out as bad, then we all have a laugh about it. I know it's a pain in the neck because I've been in areas where you had to evacuate. But if it does turn out as bad as what we're talking about, people can be isolated 2, 3, 4 days very easily in this. And I don't think that's worth the price. It's a dangerous situation overall. There are some glimmers, as I said, not going directly at Corpus Christi, a little bit east of Corpus Christi. That's a key situation. And the other situation that could be a brighter hope is that it never gets way back out over the Gulf, and it comes back in again in this area that's relatively sparsely populated. Even if it does that, it is a very, very bad situation.
All right, we really appreciate it. Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com, and Joe, we'll see you on TV tonight, just as the storm is really beginning to hit, as we come on live at 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel, and we're just asking the people to just take this seriously. This is not a game. This is real life, real danger, real threats to real people. And no life is worth losing over a house or a piece of property or whatever. And by the way, I'm as resistant as anyone. The government tells you to get out. Yeah, even if in the worst case scenario and they're just dead wrong, which Bastardi is rarely dead wrong, you know, what's the bigger downside of it? There really is none. Just being taking precautions and putting safety first. We hope you'll all listen. I see it's somebody's birthday out there today. And it's...
Happy birthday.
How are you, Velma? Happy birthday.
I love that song. Thank you.
What's going on, Velma?
Oh, nothing. Same old, same old. The boys are back in school. Everything's going good.
Who's behaving better, Marcel or Anthony, my nephews?
You know what? Probably,
what?
You know, Anthony probably. Marcel is doing good, but Anthony probably. He's growing up.
Has anyone put...
Marcel is very bright and stuff, but Marcel is still kind of, you know, babyish. But he's doing good.
Now, you're not putting him in prison again like when they put water
in
the lawnmower thinking that they were helping Dad, and you put him in prison and I had to bail him out.
I don't put those kids in prison.
You put them in prison. You put them in timeout.
John, what else am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to say they were trying to help their father. They saw their father put gasoline in the lawnmower, and so they wanted to help Dad out, and they didn't know it was gasoline. You put them in prison just for trying to help their dad out, and I don't understand. They were being good kids, and they were trying to help their father, and you put them in prison.
Yeah, by putting water in the lawnmower.
Yeah, but they did it because they were trying to help Dad. That's a good thing.
But you gotta let them. You gotta, John.
What?
You spoil kids rotten, don't you? Rotten.
I have not spoiled my nephews rotten.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
That's not true. Oh. Okay, so you want me to stop? I shouldn't get him any more gifts. That's it. You're gonna say Uncle Sean's not allowed to buy any more gifts.
That's right, because Uncle Sean, anything they sell, Uncle Sean. Yes. Yes.
Well, what do you want me to say? No, no. I mean,
yes, that's what you need to say sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not saying. Listen, I'm not saying no to my nephews if they ask me for an Xbox or they ask me for a bicycle or a little motorcycle.
I have that. You gave it to them. Thank you.
How's the motorcycles working out? I saw the video you sent me.
Oh yeah, they're doing good. They can ride that thing like a pro. They go as fast as the thing will go too. But you know what? Those boys are very good and very careful at what they do.
Yeah.
They go fast as.
Listen, that was the only gift I had some questions about, and I made you.
Because you were sitting up thinking I'm gonna see you.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna. They're gonna fall. But motorcycles are dangerous. I wouldn't have gotten the motorcycle. You wanted the motorcycle, but I wouldn't have gotten that. But you said you were going to handle it.
That kid, yes. You are the one that told him yes. And put
I said, no, no, no. I talked to you, and you had to take on the liability of...
I told you I'd do that. I told you.
And I told you to buy the... So that you make them wear the safety equipment and all the stuff they're supposed to wear?
Yes.
All right. And they don't drive it when you're not around. They don't drive it when you're not around, right?
No, we have to watch it. My husband,
right.
Myself, or
all right,
you know, somebody.
Well, by the way, that's not always going to work out because when you're not around, they steal your phone and they text me.
Yeah, I know it, but that's I locked it, honey. I got a number, and I'm being more careful with them. My friend called me yesterday. She says, "Alan, heard you on the radio with."
I know it's been like 9 months.
It's been less than that.
Okay, 6 months.
Remember, you're a busy man.
Oh, yeah, I'm very well. You're a busy woman.
I am busy.
Does your husband like me anymore? Because you told me the last time he hates me. He doesn't like me.
No, my friends and my family don't hate you. They care. I don't say they're in love with you, but they like you because you're so good to me and the kids.
Well, but they don't like my politics.
Son, but that's okay. We can be different. That's what people don't understand. I'm not going to dislike you because of your political affiliation, and you're not going to dislike me because of mine.
Listen, you know what? You are far better. You're a much better person, Christian, than I am. You do all the praying and
I pray for you, and you guess what? The Lord
what?
Blesses you, and he's going to continue to bless you.
Oh, you're sweet. I need all the blessings I can get.
Prayer, Sean, all the time. But your
well, doesn't the Lord talk to you sometimes and say, "Why are you hanging out with Hannity?" He's never said those words.
God knows that we love just because we don't agree with everything. I know.
No, I bet you he agrees with me because he did say the truth shall set you free, and I'm trying to tell the truth every day because the media is lying every day like hell.
Right.
Wait a minute. Is hell a bad word? Because hell's a real place, right?
It is.
I don't want to go to hell.
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Wait. Let me ask. Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be in heaven, but I'm going to save a spot for you.
You're going to save? Well, what makes you think you're going before me? What if I go before you?
You're not going to go before me.
Oh, no. You know what that...
You.
Wait a minute. That means I'm going to have to fly out for the funeral. I'm going to have to see all your relatives. Your husband hates me.
You always keep your promises to me. So if something happened to me, I want you in those children's life.
You want... All right, I'll tell you what...
I want you in the children's life.
Okay, I'll make a deal with you. I'll make that promise and commitment that I will be in your children's life. And if they don't go to college, Uncle Sean's going to kick their ass because that's what Uncle Sean does. And I got to do my read. All right.
I love you.
Love you too.
All right. Do your read.
All right. Can we stop? I know we got new toys, new studio. Everything's convenient. Do you mind? Thank you.
This is not okay.
Okay. No, it's not. It's not. Hearing that voice is not okay. You're right. Hey, I suffer from insomnia, but I'm doing better than ever. As we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, let's get to our busy phones. We say hi to, well, we'll go to Phoenix, Arizona, where the president was on Tuesday of this week. It's been a very busy week. And saying hi to Brandon, 550 KFYI. What's up, Brandon? How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Thanks, Sean. Great to talk to you. Hey, I just bought a Liberty Safe this week.
Oh, they're the best. Which one did you get?
I got the Fat Boy Jr.
Oh, I got the Senior. But let me tell you one thing. It is the greatest safe. Now, let me ask you, wasn't the service amazing? Aren't they the nicest people you ever deal with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They helped me out in everything that I needed.
So my phone ID comes up, and they say, Hannity, did you lose your key and your combination again? We'll send it right over. Because I've lost it like three times. That's why I like the fingerprint now opening safes. They're the best.
No, I just got the touchpad entry, and it's
oh, that's I have one with the touchpad, and it's I have the really big one. By the way, they couldn't steal that, and that's where I keep my guns that I'm not using, and then I got the fingerprint safe guns. They're awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Sean, I went to the rally on Tuesday with Trump with my 12-year-old son, and I got to tell you, he was really nervous when I had him watching all the YouTube videos of Antifa and all the protests and stuff going on. So he was really nervous when we got there. But I got to tell you, the Phoenix Police Department were amazing.
Amazing.
When we got there, we
just like Boston. Boston the weekend before was amazing. You know, Charlottesville left a lot to be desired. Virginia, McAuliffe, a lot to be desired.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two Democrats here, Stanton and Gutierrez, that are both trying to start investigations on the Phoenix police. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. I'm telling you, they put us at complete ease, and they were awesome. Very professional.
Yeah, by the way, there was a Fox Business Channel camera woman that got hit with one of the rubber bullets. And she was reporting on air. I think she was on with Trish Regan, and I watched her, and she just kept doing her job, and she was fine. You know, they're not going to kill you, but they're going to work effectively to keep you away from the trouble, and the same with tear gas. If you're going to go at the police, and if you're going to go after law-abiding citizens that have a right to go to a rally, well, that and you want to foment trouble, and this was only a very small group of people, and if you want to confront the police, that's what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't even see many of the protesters until the rally was over. I mean, they're presence wasn't even really that strong. Other, you know, contrary to what the news was reporting, they didn't even really get rambunctious until the rally was over, and then they tried to stop us from walking out of the convention center, and that's when everything started up.
And the police, it was pitch-perfect response, just like Boston. And you know what? Those are very difficult situations for the cops because they're provoking them. They're in their grill. They're in their face. And I can't say enough good about how they handled all of it. So, listen, all my best to you, friends, and I'm glad your son had that experience. It really, to start engaging in the political process at that young age is extraordinarily, I think, informative for them, and they're going to learn a lot of lessons. So, Brandon, thank you. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
My nurse came back to the room, found me with my bloody, swollen lip, and we left immediately and came home. He was getting ready and went to the door, and there I sat on the bed, just devastated. And he goes to the door, casually puts on his sunglasses, and says, "You better get some ice on that."
She held on to my hand, and she said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
She didn't even stand up for the women that knew what her husband did, and she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
We will destroy you, is what they said to me.
Who said?
My brother said it on behalf of Billy when he was campaigning for him in 1992.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
Phil, you're in any danger? And at this point, people threaten you?
Not anymore. I used to.
You used to think that you were
in
physical danger?
Really, really. Yeah, I was. I was very scared. I was horribly, horribly threatened. And people don't know that story.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
Did you see what happened to Jennifer Flowers?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what was happening to Paula Jones? My allegation. Yes. No, not afraid. I just knew what would happen.
This is not okay, I thought. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
If I ever had to meet her in person, it would be very hard for me not to walk up and smack her. I know that sounds mean. I mean, she put me through a lot at 12 years old. I mean, I had to go look through this window and ID these guys. I just want to know, you got a daughter and a grandbaby. What happens if that daughter of yours, if that would have been her, and they pulled you in at that time to do that? What would you done? You would have protected her. Where you don't know me, so I'm a piece of crap to you. You know, who cares about me as long as you can win your first case as an attorney? And that was her first case ever.
I am sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic. And we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
All right, there it is, Hillary Clinton and all of the things she's saying. I don't even know where to begin. That is not okay. He was invading my space. He made my skin crawl. Literally, back up, you creep, I'm thinking. I'm like, wow. Anyway, here to debate. Well, there is some hypocrisy, as you just heard from Paula Jones and Kathleen Willey and Juanita Broderick. And, of course, then there's the little affair thing with Monica Lewinsky that we know about, you know, the intern at the White House. D.C. McAllister, Federalist, PJ Media, Emily Shire, journalist, who appeared in the Washington Post.
the New York Times. In other words, fake news outlets. Welcome both of you to the program. So, Emily, let me ask you a question. Do you think she should have ever publicly said about her husband that what he's doing with these women is creepy? And not only did she not say ever anything against those the attacks against these women and the relationships with these women, but then she also took money from a lot of countries that abuse women. And I'll get to that in a second, like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and UAE and all these other countries. And she never criticized them either. Are those things creepy, the way they treat women in those countries?
So I think actually the point about what role she played in when women accused her husband of sexual assault was one that actually a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters brought up.
I didn't ask you what Bernie Sanders... Did I ask you what Bernie Sanders supporters thought? If I wanted a Bernie Sanders supporter, I'm asking what you think. Was it creepy what her husband did? Let's just start with Monica, which we know happened. Was that creepy?
That, by Monica Lewinsky's account, was consensual. Do I take the allegations against...
So it's not creepy that the president of the United States had an intern perform oral sex on them.
Doesn't cover it. I think creepy doesn't cover it. When someone alleges sexual assault, it is far more serious than creepy.
Okay, so did you believe... I've interviewed Juanita Paula and Kathleen Willey and others. Do you believe them?
I certainly take their account seriously, yes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there in the moment.
Well, Hillary Clinton once said that women have a right to be believed. You know, and
yes, and I think there is a tremendous hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women have called that out. I think that is a problem that...
No, I don't want to hear about a lot of women. I want to know what you think, Emily. Stop with a lot of women and Bernie Sanders support. I want to know what you think. When she takes money, for example, from Saudi Arabia, women can't drive, women told how to dress, women can't travel or even leave the house without an adult relative, gays and lesbians are murdered and killed for who they are, Christians and Jews are persecuted. Now, then you've got Algeria, where they punish gays and lesbians the same way, and Brunei, Oman, and Qatar, and United Arab Emirates. Marital rape in some of these countries is acceptable. And she took money from them and never criticized them. Was that appropriate of her? Does she have a mantle on this women's rights issue when she takes money from countries that abuse women?
She never criticized them in terms
of their
foreign policy, but I think...
No, she never criticized this.
We all the time work with governments who we don't agree with their treatment of women or how they...
Okay, I'm not talking about working with women. She took money for the Clinton Foundation, and I dare you to go find the research when she's ever criticized these countries for their human rights abuses, which is what I'm describing. I wouldn't take a penny from Saudi Arabia, would you? Would you, Emily?
We, as a country.
I'm not asking as a country or as Bernie. Would you take a penny from a country that forces women how to dress and they can't drive a car and they kill gays and lesbians? I wouldn't take a penny.
No, I personally wouldn't.
Okay, well, your friend Hillary did. D.C. McAllister.
Guess what? Our government gives money to these kinds of countries. So I don't really know why you're holding the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton to a standard.
I don't know why you thread a needle and defend the indefensible and say you're a champion of women's rights. D.C. McAllister.
Well, I think the hypocrisy is definitely self-evident. I mean, you've made the point. You've shown it. I mean, you can't really defend this. She is hypocritical in her defense of these men and nations and associating with them, even though they are very abusive to women. I mean, she hangs out with Anthony Weiner, and she talks about Trump being creepy. What I find really offensive here, though, is not just her hypocrisy, but the fact that this woman stood on stage having the privilege of being the nominee for president. She is a privileged woman. She has a lot of advantages. She has had a lot of success, a lot of wealth. She stands up there vying to be the leader of our country, and she plays the victim card to manipulate us and compare herself, this privileged woman, to real victims. And by doing that, she is a mockery. She's making a mockery of real victims. People like Juanita Broderick, or even many victims in this country who actually know what it's like to be in the presence of a creepy man who threatens them. Trump was not threatening her. She was not a victim. She was in a privileged station, and she's playing on our sympathies to feel sorry for her. How dare she? I talk to real victims of rape. I talk to real women. I've experienced myself creepy guys in real life. She has no right to stand there and play the victim in her state and in her position as privileged as she is. She needs to shut her mouth and be honest about what she is, and that is just a political opportunist.
These are the women who have come forth, the dozens with sexual assault allegations against Donald Trump, also privileged? Will you stand up as forthrightly for them? Are we believing them?
Can I just jump in? Which one? Because all of the women that were written about in the New York Times, I interviewed almost all of them, and they all said the New York Times lied, including Carrie Prejean, a former girlfriend. Everyone, front page, big story, New York Times, and they all debunked what the New York Times had reported. Who are you specifically talking about?
You're talking about a specific report in the spring where you're absolutely right. The New York Times did frame one of their main accounts in the wrong light. What about all the women who came forward with tearful accounts later on in the election cycle? What about the woman who had been on The Apprentice, who said Donald Trump took off his clothes in front of her and was pressuring her if she wanted to get a
job?
Right,
quick answer, D.C., and then we got to move on.
Emily, you're setting up a false equivalency. I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's the one claiming to be a victim. She was claiming as if she was somehow threatened by this man. That's how she was putting it. When you put yourself as a victim, you're making someone else to be a predator. And she was saying that Donald Trump is being a predator toward her, that she wants our sympathy toward her because she was a victim.
All right, stay right there. D.C., we got to take a break. More with D.C. McAllister and Emily Shire, 800-941-SEAN. All right, as we continue, Hillary Clinton's new book out, and he's creepy, and we're talking about the double standard, D.C. McAllister, Emily Shire, and, you know, I just find frustrating, D.C., and I like Emily. Emily's been a longtime friend of the program, and it's very, very frustrating when the left is confronted with obvious examples of hypocrisy, like taking money from countries that abuse women, kills gays and lesbians, and literally persecute Christians and Jews. You know what? I wouldn't care if I had 2 cents in my pocket or less. I wouldn't take any money from those people. Now, it's different from what the country has to do. You know, we teamed up with the former Soviet Union to defeat Nazi Germany. They weren't our friends, the former Soviet Union. So you have to, as a country, deal with people you don't want to like all the time. But as an individual, Rudy Giuliani turned down $10 million from this guy that was anti-Semitic after 9/11. And that was a principled stand. And I'm saying if Hillary was really creeped out like she claims, Hillary wouldn't have taken the money. And Hillary would have spoken out and said, it's creepy what my husband did. And that's the great hypocrisy of her comments.
Well, absolutely. I mean, she's a political animal and she's a hypocrite. And you have to look at the facts and admit that. But one thing I think I can agree on with Emily is that sexual assault accusations are very serious, and so are the sexual assault itself. And one of the problems with what Hillary did was not only her hypocrisy, which, Sean, you pointed out brilliantly, but also the fact that she's playing a victim. And in a world where women are sexually assaulted, we want those events, those situations to be taken seriously. And often they're not, because women do make false accusations, as we learned from the Duke LaCrosse situation. So we want credibility in this. And here we have Hillary Clinton playing the victim and feeding into the narrative that women can't be trusted, that women play the victims all the time, make false accusations. She stands for feminism in a way that just puts no credibility on women. And this is
there is some truth. D.C., this is something that not a lot of people recognize. I know people that were falsely accused of sexual harassment. I know them. And as soon as the accusation is made, it's almost like it's believed instantaneously.
Absolutely. It's very serious. And so we can't make a game of this. And that's exactly what Hillary Clinton's done. She's not only made a mockery of the whole situation, of the accusations, but also of women who actually have been sexually assaulted, by putting herself on the same level as real victims. This should be offensive to everyone, whether you're a liberal or a conservative. It doesn't matter. This, what she did is just a disservice to women. It is very much a disservice.
Emily?
Yeah, I actually very much agree that although many women will connect with what Hillary Clinton is saying about her interaction with Trump, and I think it's important to note that she's not saying she was sexually harassed. She is definitely saying she felt like a victim. It won't resonate with many women, with a large portion of women as well, because this is a certain kind of harassment that is a lower level than explicit sexual assault. I think the reason this moment connected with a lot of people and Hillary Clinton was deemed the winner of this debate was in part.
Well, hang on one second. You're wrong. That's the night that Donald Trump became president. Because it was just after that NBC Access Hollywood tape had come out. I've looked at the tape many times. Did you feel in any way, D.C. McAllister, that Donald Trump was invading Hillary's space in a creepy way? I didn't see it.
Oh, absolutely not. And you're supposed to be president. You're wanting to be president of the United States, and you're creeped out by the guy behind you. Are you kidding me? You're going to be dealing with world figures on the stage. You know, I can't even believe this, that she would even compare or complain about this. You know, standing on a debate stage in a privileged situation that was very safe. And this is not true. She didn't feel threatened. She loved being up there. She's not a victim. And this isn't the first time she's played victim. She was a victim of the right-wing conspiracy.
All right, I'm going to have to...
poverty. You know, she's a victim of everything.
I'm going to have to leave it right there. Thank you, Emily. D.C., it's been too long. Thank you so much for being with us. 800-941-SHAWN, a toll-free telephone number. R.C. Maxwell is going to be our guest. I saw this videotape. I was so angry. A young man gets cold-cocked, hit from, not even looking, hit from the side, had no chance to defend himself by one of these leftist agitators. We're putting the video on Hannity.com if you want to look at it in a break. And then we'll introduce you to this young man when we come back. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to join us. Quick break, right back. We'll continue to monitor all the events, Hurricane Harvey and much more. 10 Eastern tonight is about when it hits landfall. And we'll get to that then and hope you'll join us tonight.
Check out the show 24/7. Download it to your iPod. Be a Hannity Insider at Hannity.com.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's Friday. We made it. And this is the time you just begin to, like, take a deep breath. We've had a pretty stressful week here because we've had, well, new studios. This is going to be honest. We have buried the Sean Hannity Show studios in a place that nobody will ever, ever find it. You know, with all that's going on, and let's just say all the very kind and sweet and loving voicemails, notes, texts and tweets, and even faxes that come in, we've just decided that maybe we're not going to be so public with where we are every day. And so we have these beautiful new underground bunker palatial studios. And it's not, we're not stealing Mark Levin's bunker. Wait a minute. I had the bunker first. Yeah, well, he was smart. He got a bunker right out of the box. We didn't know we were going to need one right away. So, but whenever you have a new studio, before we do FGL, I want to grade, because I came in on Monday. I knew anytime you get a new studio that we're going to have little glitches that need to be worked out. We've had glitches all week. Not that any of you out there in Radio Land would know. And the one thing I was not going to do is add to everybody's pressure, because everybody been moving and everybody built the studios and they're really beautiful and they did a phenomenal job. And it's normal to have technical glitches when you got all this equipment in here. I mean, it's crazy. So last time when Linda was out the week, I got graded, and so I'll grade myself this week. We'll start with Sunshine today, who upped her grade from an 80 to a 95 the last time. What do I get this time?
You are a total honor roll student this week, Sean. You get a 100.
Whoa, Ethion. What do I get?
I would give you higher than 100 if I could. You actually were exceptional.
Okay, and what did I do to our new neighbors today?
You were very nice and bought them all lunch.
I bought everybody lunch today. All right, JC Owen, what do I get?
I say I'd give you a 93.
Why a 93? I didn't do one thing. You individually, because you're running that board and you're the engineer, I gave you the most slack.
Because of the pizza, I'll give you a 98.
Well, what do I ever need to do to get 100?
We'll talk about that later, okay? Just be happy with the grade. Stop being such a snowflake.
Oh, wow. So mean. Linda, all right, we came to you last because I figured they would soften you up for the... I'd soften myself up for the blow.
I thought you did great.
Like, that's not a number. What's the grade?
110.
Wow.
You were very well behaved.
All right, I got to give all of you 110s, too. Great week this week. And Clay, by the way, has been working hard this week.
Clay is a rock star. He's our favorite
star.
Person here.
He's your favorite person here, not me, Clay. Rock star.
Because Clay makes it work so that we don't have to hear you yell.
I wouldn't have yelled. Not this week.
Of course not.
No.
Only Frozen Heart yells.
Yeah, I did say that today. That was done in good what?
That was all
sunshine.
In good fun, but I like it. I think I'm going to keep that new name. I'm going to be Frozen
No,
Heart.
In that particular instance, it was like, hello.
No, I'm keeping it. I like
wake
it.
Wake up. Wake up. All right, let's put our party hats on. It's Friday, Florida Georgia Line, Friday concert series. It is, as all of them, tough weeks. And our prayers go out to, and this music goes out to all our friends and the Houston, Galveston, Corpus Christi area. We're praying for everybody this weekend. Hang in there, and if you got to get out, get out. Listen, and we pray there's not much damage and nobody gets hurt. All right, let's hit it.
Hammer and a nail, stacking them bales. I'm dog tired by the 5 o'clock hour, but I'm ready to raise some hay. Came and the sky fall to only bring the rain. I sat in darkness, all broken hearted. I couldn't find a day, I didn't feel alone. I never meant to cry, started losing hope. But somehow, baby, you broke through and saved me. You're an angel, tell me you never leave. And 'cause you're the first thing I know. I can't believe it. You're holy, 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 holy. I'm high on loving you, high on loving you. You're holy, 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 holy. I'm high on loving you, high on loving you.
You made the brightest day from the darkest nights. You're the riverbank where I was baptized, cleansed from the demons that were killing my freedom. Let me lay you down, give me to ya, get you singing, babe, hallelujah. We'll be touching heaven. You're an angel, tell me you're never leaving, 'cause you're the first. No, I can't believe.
A little
FGL on a Friday, putting a smile on your face. Tonight on Hannity, it's 10 Eastern when this thing hits, and we'll have full, live, complete coverage of everything that's going on. As Joe Bastardi's been telling us all day, this is not going to be good. And literally the storm is going to hover, and you're going to get all of this rain that's going to drop down on everybody here. So our thoughts and prayers are with the great people, Corpus Christi. We love Texas on this program. We love everybody in Texas. They're great people. And I know that the federal government is ready because I've actually talked to people. So imagine my surprise. I found alone, I do a lot of internet searching, a lot of reading, and I'm up late, and that's the way I live my life. I'm nocturnal. Anyway, there was a really unbelievable attack against an innocent man. And I remember I found the video and I sent it to Linda and I said, Linda, will you please find this young man? Because he was interviewed on a local TV station. His name is R.C. Maxwell. He's from Los Angeles. And they did a news report on CBS L.A. about this attack. And what you can see is it occurred during a rally at Main Beach in Laguna Beach. It was all captured on two different angles on a cell phone. Laguna police say this guy, Richard Lousy from Ohio. Anyway, so very politely, very kindly, very nicely, R.C. Maxwell is just talking about his opinions with some of the people that are there protesting. Couldn't be nicer. And then out of the left side, he's not even looking at this guy. The guy comes up and sucker punches him. And I said, Linda, I want to talk. And then I saw the interview with this young man. And I said, this is ridiculous. And then the guy on Twitter is like, oh, I hope they arrest me. He got arrested. Anyway, R.C. Maxwell is with us. Then when Linda found her, she goes, well, you know what his handle on Twitter is. And I'm like, no, I don't know what his handle on Twitter is. Then she tells me it's at Black Hannity. And I'm like, seriously? I just couldn't believe it. First of all, R.C., welcome to the program. I'm so sorry what happened to you. And I wish I was there with you. Because if I was there with you, it would have been a very different conclusion. You are not allowed to go up and sucker punch the way this guy did you. But I did see during the interview, you didn't even have a mark on you. And the guy like wound up and threw it.
Yeah, no, he definitely blindsided me with all of his might. But the good thing was, he's a left-sider. So, he didn't have much behind the punch. And I was able to go to work the next day.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you, but to me, the reason it just impacted me so much is just watching the tape, you were just being nice. Tell us what was going on.
Yeah, I like to find commonality at these kinds of events with the other side. That's why I come dressed nicely. I don't wear battle gear and masks on my face, and I don't come armed with pepper spray. I came armed with just Milo Yiannopoulos is dangerous.
Right.
And, I was talking to the other side. Literally about why, I have certain stances on illegal immigration. And I was telling them that I was from Inglewood. I was trying to, humanize, the anti-illegal immigration side, but they did not want to listen. Antifa circled me pretty quickly there. We were definitely outnumbered.
And there were a lot of people there. After you got sucker punched, what happened after that? Because I didn't see that part of the video. From that point, it got cut off.
Yeah, immediately after the sucker punch, I kind of got out of the situation because you can't really tell how many. I couldn't really, tell who hit me, how many there were, and then it was kind of just that guy screaming, and everyone was like, joking about it, like heck yeah, heck yeah. And then I tried to alert some of the officers, but they had a tough job in Laguna. They were out in riot gear and they couldn't really break rank to kind of take a look at the situation.
But did they see you got hit?
They did see that I got hit. They did let me know I can go down to a station a few blocks away and file a report. I didn't do it at the moment because I had my own camera crew there that I was concerned for as well.
Are you a reporter or what do you do?
No, I run a political action committee, American Voice. It was founded by C.L. Bryant, someone I think.
Oh, my God. He's one of my favorite people in the world. I didn't know you were friends with C.L. He's such an awesome role model for you. That's great. He's a role model for me. He tells me every time I talk to him, I'm praying for you, Hannity. You need it bad. I'm praying. I'm like, I'll take it. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? That's kind of why I go by the moniker Black Hannity, because, you're pretty bold out there, and you have put yourself under a target by some of the radicalism for a long time. So, you know, I kind of do the same, and I did the same going to talk to the other side in Laguna, and they didn't want to listen. So the reason I had the camera crew was, you know, really just to record my interactions with the other side.
Is there a lot more video that you could share with us that we could? Obviously, we've got weather going on all night tonight, but I'd love to have you on TV next week. And I know we've talked about it on Monday. How about this? Are you busy? We'll fly you out to New York. I'll take care of your bill. I'll put you on an airplane. You come visit us. I'll get you a hotel in New York. You can bring your girlfriend or whoever you want to bring.
That would be fantastic. I'll bring Laura Loomer. She's in New York.
Okay, that's great. All right, I'll tell you what. Stay on hold. Are you okay in terms of, do you need any help with lawyers or anything I could do to help you?
No, look, you know, I'm okay. You know, I have a guy in Manhattan Beach who's reached out just in case I need him. I'm fine on that regard. So, you know, if anyone wants to help me out in any way, they can just give to the Political Action Committee, because the worst thing that this can do for the left side is give me the ability to control funds to elect candidates that are just as bold as I am.
All right, so stay right there. Linda's going to make the arrangements. We'll get you into New York, and maybe you can feed all the tape to our TV team, and we'll show it to people on Monday or Tuesday. Maybe, depending on how the storm, it's going to hang over the Galveston, move up to Houston by, I think, Monday. So we'll get you on either Monday or Tuesday. I look forward to meeting you, and thanks so much. RC, thank you for being with us, and I'm so sorry that happened to you. What I meant was I would have had your back. Not that,
of course.
I don't let friends of mine get sucker punched. I defend my friends. Okay, so God bless you. I'm glad you're okay. It's unbelievable, the atmosphere out there. All right, Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern, Fox News. Of course, we'll be covering the hurricane. Just as we are coming on the air, we expect that this is literally going to be touching ground. So we'll have the best coverage. We have the best reporters. And our thoughts and prayers, again, go out to the people of Texas. And, of course, this country will be ready. Whatever help and assistance you need, that's who we are. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tonight at 10. We'll be back here on Monday.